We at the Pet Collective Podcast are not medical professionals. We do offer advice, but please always consult your veterinarian before making any medical decisions. This week, we are discussing things you can do in the house to create novel experiences for your pets, specific toys and treats for cats and dogs to keep them entertained, how training is the ultimate stimulation, plus we talk about the world of dating during the pandemic and why cat butts seem to be everywhere.
If you don't like humans, that's understandable. I'd rather spend time with my furry animal. It's the Pet Collective, yeah.
Hey, I'm Allison Seeky.
And I'm very intrigued.
Oh, you probably need Kyle. My name. Yeah.
I'm Kyle Kittleson.
Welcome to the Pet Collective. This is the podcast for pet parents and the pet obsessed. How many cat butts have you seen this week, Kyle?
Oh, too many to count, but never enough, you know? Just
yeah, could
love
always
seeing those
use
cat butts.
Some more.
So, Miss Allison, personal question. Because we keep saying we're going to get personal in our lives.
Oh, what do you want to know?
Who you dating, girl?
Quarantine has been an interesting time to be dating.
At first, I thought the guy's name was Quarantine. Like, that was like, because I said, who you're dating? You're like, Quarantine. Like, he sounds awesome.
I wonder
awesome.
If anybody's name is. No, his name is Quora, and he's a teen. Not true. I would say I'm kind of in between people right now. My quarantine situation has been very strange. I was like living with this guy that I was dating for the first month, and then
Have you guys been together?
Well, what is together? Kyle, dating these days is so different. I have known this guy for a year. But we have been on one date. But the whole time we've been hanging out. But it's not dating if you're not going on dates, right?
I agree.
Yeah, he didn't even realize it because I don't know what happened to these guys' dads, but a lot of the dudes that I'm meeting don't know how to court a woman, and I'm not even asking for the full shebang.
It's Los Angeles. No one knows how to court a woman in Los Angeles. Are you kidding?
I mean, I do, so figure it
out.
There
you go.
Seriously,
I would court a woman real good.
Maybe you would. Why don't you give it a try?
You know, I did that in eighth grade, and it lasted about a week and a half, and that was the extent of my women courting. But I did great. Her name was Jordan. We dated for a week and a half. I broke up with her through a friend, so that's how I handled that mess.
Cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, one time, though, I thought I was dating this guy, and it turned out he was just using me as his dog sitter. So we would hang out, but it was always... Mostly, it was platonic. It was like a friendship, but I had a huge crush on him. And he would always leave his dog with me. And I was like, oh, I don't mind. Like, let me show him what a great, like,
right
caretaker partner. I am. Yeah.
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 I mean, obviously, you and I would never date anyone who didn't like animals or didn't like our pets.
I mean, no, right, I've like, tried. I've tried, and I
don't
actually
even
came at him harder. Well, I didn't know he was that kind of person. And then my dog accidentally jumped on his bed, and he was like, ugh, get your dog off of there. And I was like, you are way more disgusting than my dog.
Yes.
And he was like, why did you come at me? And I was like, because you came at my dog.
No, I get that. But my question that I need help on is, how much should they be into your dog? Because ideally for me, I would like them to be obsessed. And I'm talking about like daily requests for pictures. You should probably bring my dog a toy every other time I see you. You know, that type of obsession. And I will accept less, but I just don't know how much less I can accept.
Totally. I want them to have the same kind of love that I have for my pet so that they don't. So I don't feel judged when I'm talking to her like the baby that she is. I like it when a guy watches my dog for a couple hours for me, too. That's really nice. It's helpful.
I'm dating a guy who I am really enamored with. I'm quarantine dating. And
it's a new thing?
Yeah, it's new. It's like just over a month.
Oh, okay.
And he doesn't ask me about my dog enough.
What? I guess it probably just doesn't occur to him. Maybe he,
well, that,
you know,
might be a problem.
Yeah. Well, you know, nobody that we're dating is a mind reader. So sometimes you just got to tell them, like, hey, I need you to care more about my dog or this isn't going to work.
Well, and because we're quarantine dating, it's not as though we've been able to meet a gazillion times and he's met my dog or anything, you know?
Yeah.
He just knows I have one. So I think once he meets her and gets to know her, he'll become obsessed like everybody else.
And if not, then you'll know that it's time to say goodbye.
If not, to the doghouse for him.
Okay. Oh, the doghouse. Remember the days. This whole house is a doghouse.
Well, no question. You and I have had major episodes of boredom during this awful quarantine.
Yeah.
But we have to remember that our pets have kind of been in quarantine their entire lives.
Mm.
And even if you do a lot of stuff with your pets outside, they probably still spend the majority of their time in the home. So I'm very excited to jump in today's episode on how pet parents can make the at-home environment for their dogs and cats a little more reinforcing and a little happier of a place. What do you do with Peaches at home?
I talk to her like,
ooh,
she's a
that.
Human. Like, and I consciously try not to use the baby voice all the time, even though it does inevitably come out. But I like to just talk with her about stuff like, oh, I'm doing this right now, but I'll play with you in 20 minutes. And I know that she doesn't know what I'm saying, but I can tell she's listening and that's taking her away from whatever boredom thoughts she was having or not having. So I just kind of, you know, I try to keep her alert by talking to her all the time.
Well, here's some advanced level dog training, okay? I don't think most people would know this, so buckle in, pet parents. But routines are incredible for both dogs and cats. Naturally, as people, we typically fall into a routine. Perhaps during quarantine, that routine has changed. But nevertheless, even in quarantine, most people still have some routine. Mine today was I slept 10 hours last night and then took a 4-hour nap. That was my routine, okay? So we all have our routine. Because dogs and cats respond so well to those routines, it gives us a chance to break the routines up. And when you break your routine up, that is a novel experience for your pet and therefore likely a reinforcing experience for your pet. So as pet parents go into the next week, consider breaking up your pet's routine as a way to reward them for great behavior. For example, if every morning you wake up and you feed your dog and then you take your dog on a walk. But let's say tomorrow morning you wake up and you take your dog on a 5-minute walk first. And then you come back inside and they get breakfast and then immediately go for a 10-minute walk.
Wow.
Just that small change, your dog's gonna go, wait a minute, this is so different. Most people take the same walk over and over and over again. Consider breaking up that walk so that you turn left instead of right. If you really want to leverage the novelty of breaking up a routine, consider training your dog on that walk, and when they succeed, make a change in the walk. So if you always walk down Flower Street every day, before you turn down Flower Street, ask your dog to sit, stay, lay down, work through some behaviors. If they're successful, don't walk down Flower Street. Walk down a brand new street.
Ooh.
That type of novelty is really reinforcing to them. It gives them new sights, new smells, new sounds, and it came right after a successful behavior, so you actually reinforce them for doing the behavior that you asked. So routines are really great, but make sure that we break them up to keep things novel for our dogs and reinforce them for good behavior.
Yeah, I'm missing a huge opportunity there with the behavior training, because I'd take a different route each time for my own sanity.
Right. Well, that's fine too. And maybe that is it. But even if you took a different route each time, you're still probably taking the same 4 or 5 routes. You know, there's probably different route you could take if you wanted to. And we could put half the dog trainers in America out of business, which would be great, by the way, because, you know, we want our dogs not to need training. We want us not to need training. We want to be great, great dog parents. But we could put them out of business if people just got their pets more exercise. Problem behaviors like barking, getting into the trash, counter surfing, pulling on a leash, peeing in the house, chewing up shoes or whatever it is. Most of those things will go away or decrease significantly if you just up the exercise of your pet. But upping the exercise is not a 5 minute longer walk, okay? It's really getting that heart rate going, playing with them, fetch, tug of war, maybe running if you can do that. That's how you get the heart rate up. And I'm telling you, you'll see a totally different change in your dog's behavior.
What about dogs playing with other dogs on a walk? There's actually a corner in my neighborhood where all of the dog owners get together just before the sun sets to let their dogs exhaust each other. They're the people who don't want to walk a lot. And they're like, oh, we'll just let them run themselves crazy. Yeah, it's really nice.
Yes. And all of that type of exercise is, 50% of what, if you just do that, you're going to take care of 50% of problems.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really that critical. And I've, like we mentioned at one of the first episodes, I haven't met anybody, maybe besides you, Allison, who gets their dogs enough exercise, you know?
Well, thank you. I'd like to attribute that to having little better to do. And being maybe unhealthfully attached to my dog.
Okay, so the first thing we're going to discuss today is how to mentally stimulate your dog. And there are two buckets to pull from. One is training, and the other one are things like toys and treats. Now, whether you're training an undesirable behavior or a stupid pet trick, it doesn't matter. The training is such a brain workout for your animal. And if you're doing the training correctly, they should love it. Remember how, like, you didn't always love going to chemistry class, but you always loved, like, preschool? Like, preschool is awesome. You're like, colors, painting. You're working your mind, but it was really fun. Yeah. We're trying to do preschool sandbox with our dog. We want them to love it. It's still mentally enriching, but they enjoy doing it. What we don't want to do is chemistry class, okay? Because that's probably not enjoyable for most people. So training is the first bucket. But the second bucket are toys. The toy industry is so critical to our dog and cat's overall well-being. And I've mentioned to you that I've had so many Skype and FaceTime consultations with new clients because they just got a new puppy or they just rescued a new dog or they just started fostering. And I go, okay, well, where are their toys? And they go, oh, well, we only have a couple, but we put them away. I go, what, you bought them to put in your closet?
Yeah.
Give them to the dog. They need these. So we'll go through some great puzzle toys in a bit. Now, my all-time favorite toy, though, for real, is those sticks that you throw the ball with. And they go like 100,000 feet.
I just recently got one purely for the sake of not wanting to touch strange dog saliva at the park. But that it's amazing.
Amazing. Guys, you know what we're talking about. It's the best. I probably have 7 of them.
Do you
because
really?
I'm just like, why not? You know, one for the car, one for the closet, one for my dad's house, one for a friend's house. Like, just I have like a gazillion of them.
They're super handy. And it makes it a lot less exhausting. You don't have to bend over to pick up the ball. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very important, though, that people don't just buy toys and give it to their dog. In fact, one of the things that make toys so great is that they can be used to build your relationship with your dog. Lots of toys are only exciting to the dog if they are being handled by a human. Mm-hmm. For example, my dog likes tennis balls, but she really likes tennis balls if I'm throwing them. My dog likes a rope, but she really likes it if I'm playing tug. So there are different ways you can interact with your dog with toys. And one of my favorite things to do, and it's a fun game, makes for great Instagram content for all you Instagrammers out there, is pick 3 toys, okay? Maybe a ball, a bone, and a rope. And you'll ask your dog to sit. Then you'll ask your dog to stay. And assuming your dog can do those things, you'll lay the three toys in front of the dog.
Ooh.
Then when you say okay or release your dog from that stay, the dog will go and choose one of the toys. Whatever choice they make, and they make it by picking it up and taking it wherever they're going to take it, you remove the other two. Now, the first time this happens, your dog might take the first toy and then come back and go, wait, where'd the other two go? Mm-hmm. But over time, your dog will learn, ooh, okay, this is the thing where I only get to choose one. And so you'll see them really think about making the decision of like, which one should I take? Which is the best one for now? Da, da, da. And they might take this one and be like, nope, I actually wanted first one, you know? And so it's a really exciting thing for them to do. And you're putting them in control. We don't give our dogs enough options. We don't allow them to drive the boat enough. And this allows them to choose what they're going to play with for the evening or the morning.
I love that. You know, I always think about how important it is for us to give our dogs structure so that they can mm-hmm. succeed. But I don't think about empowering them to make choices and giving them like an environment to do that within.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yes. That can really
enrich
a dog's life.
You'll also learn what your dog likes. For example, if you do this, you know, twice a week or you do it on Fridays, over time you'll see, all right, you know, Schroeder over here never chooses the tennis ball. So maybe you don't need to keep buying Schroeder tennis balls, but he always goes for the plush toy. So guess what you probably want more toys of? Plush toys for Schroeder, you know? So you're going to learn their likes and dislikes really easily.
So, like, because Peaches isn't destroying her toys and I'm a perfect human who never loses anything,
right?
How often do I need to get new toys? I mean, these toys are lasting. I wash them. But I also understand how exciting it is to have something new. I don't want to overdo that. How often do I need to get something different?
Well, I'm a dog parent on a budget, honey, and I do not have time to invest $500 a month on new toys for the queen.
Oh, no.
So what I like to do is two things. One, cycle out your toys. Your dog should not have access to all your toys all the time. Your dog should have access to some of the toys some of the time, and those times and toys should be variable. The second thing is combine 1, 2, 3, or 4 toys together to make a brand new toy. So if you have a toy rope, flip that rope through the tire, wa-bam, you just got a new toy with the dog, for the dog. If you have there's so many crazy toys out there, but if you have a cool toy with some holes in it, put some treats in that toy so that your dog now has to fish those treats out of the toy. If your dog typically likes this bone, but maybe this bone, he's not into it anymore, maybe you put a little peanut butter on it or shove a carrot inside or something. You can repurpose your toys to make them more novel for your dog. And I don't buy a lot of toys because toys are only part of it, right? We do training, we do exercise, and then we have toys.
Yeah.
So if you're leveraging your toys correctly, you don't have to have 40,000 toys somewhere. You can have, 5 to 10, cycle them through, and it's budget friendly.
Okay, let's talk about toys and mental enrichment for cats, because of course they do play much differently than dogs. How and how often should we be playing with our cats?
Well, I would say as often as you and your cat want. And cats are very good at telling you, no, not now, please. Please come back later. Mm. So that is a nice little bonus for them. But with cats, typically their toys require some sort of interaction or movement. For example, I can give Callie a bone and then she can just go lay down
go
and
to
chew
town.
The bone and go to town. With a cat, it's going to require me to operate the toy, or there are lots of cat toys that have movement to them so the cat can play with them one-on-one. But that movement is really critical. You know, everyone knows this, but it's worth repeating if you don't have one, cat parents, get a laser pointer. They go nuts for those things. Even dog parents, it's really fun and you can do that without moving, which is my favorite way to play.
So simple, no cleanup, probably lasts forever.
I actually have something to ask about that, because I'm a cat owner and we bought a laser pointer And I don't know, I hope maybe some other cat owners are wondering this too. My cat would chatter a lot, like an excessive amount when playing with the laser pointer. And so we kind of felt like he was getting a little stressed out because he couldn't actually catch anything. There was no reward. It was just like right. this, you know, thing that it's like this elusive thing he could never really get his teeth on, you know? So I was just right. wondering if that's a stress point.
Oh.
Well, it can be, but we also have to remember that no animal, no human, no animal lives without stress. Stress is a natural part of our existence, and we need it. Stress tells us that we have to get up in the morning and make it to work. Stress tells us that, you know, we're running late or whatever it is. And animals, to a degree, need some stress. An animal who just lives in this peaceful world where nothing ever happens, that in itself isn't good. You know, it's too boring. They need the different types of interactions. So granted, we'd have to look at the cat's behavior to see if it was really, you know, something aversive and we to decide whether we want to take it away or not. But it might be something that, all right, you play with the laser pointer for a little bit and then you incorporate a tiny ball or a feather toy or something so that they can have that end goal. But this idea, and this is a really good point, and I'll belabor this just a little bit. This idea that no animal should ever be stressed out isn't an idea I think we should pursue, because it's not possible. Our animals are going to be stressed out inevitably about something, mm-hmm. and they have to learn to tolerate that stress. That's somewhat how separation anxiety is managed. They have to learn to tolerate their alone time. They have to build independence and build resilience. And so we don't ever want an animal to be hurt. We don't want the stress to be chronic. Mm-hmm. But incorporating different emotions and a different peaks and valleys, so to say, during our day really helps build a well-rounded animal. I mean, like, this is an extreme example, okay? And you might even cut this out. But, like, you know when you're in a car and someone almost hits you? And your adrenaline pumps and you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I hate that.
Yeah. But then afterwards, you're awake. Oh, you're yeah. alive. Yeah, you're yeah, like, yeah. wow, what happened?
I could have died.
And you're very alert. And then you're more careful on the rest of your drive. Mm. So do we want that to happen every four blocks?
No.
But if it happens once a year, it's a nice reminder that you got to pay attention when you drive. Okay, so these types of interactions aren't necessarily the worst thing. I don't want pet parents to beat themselves up about it. It's okay if your animal has a little bit of good stress in their life.
Got it. So I shouldn't let my cat drive the car is what you're telling me.
Not until they're 16.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Just checking. Yeah. Got it. No, but so give them the laser pointer, but also, you know, mix it up with other toys.
Yeah, and what you want to make sure you don't do with any toy is you use it over and over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. You know the best time to remove a toy or a laser pointer from the animal, Allison?
No, I don't know the best time.
The best time to do it is when it's at their height of their interest.
Oh.
The height of their interest. And that sounds like an aw. But if my dog loves playing fetch, okay? And I'm playing fetch, and then they eventually go, I'm so over fetch. But I'm like, no, you love this. Play fetch. I could make fetch something they don't like. But if we're playing fetch, and they're like, this is awesome. And then I say, I know it's awesome. Guess what else is awesome? This treat or this toy or this experience, or we're going on a walk or whatever it is.
Then everything
we're
just is moving. Staying awesome.
Yes. And then guess what? When we go back to fetch, they're like, oh, I remember this. This was so much fun.
It's
instead of
awesome.
Going, oh, yeah, this is the thing that you made me do until I didn't want to do it anymore. Why don't you talk some good toys and bad toys for cats?
I would love to. So cats are freaking hilarious. Am I right?
So funny.
Cats love felt mice, but they also love real mice. And I'm like, that's hilarious because they're nothing like each other. I would highly recommend felt mice over real mice because nobody's going to get hurt. Also good toys for cats. Anything that's like on a very secure string. That way you can pull it away, bounce it around. Treat dispensing puzzle toys are great for cats. Anything that is stuffed with catnip drives them crazy in the best way. Cats also love tunnels. They love towers. They like things they can climb and get lost in. Maybe a scratching post or two. And again, laser pointers. So fun. No cleanup. Endless entertainment with cats.
And can we please talk about catnip? Because it's one of the greatest things ever created out of nature. It is, I mean, if you're out there and you've not seen a cat on catnip, like, go find some videos of that stuff.
So, like, it's are they actually intoxicated? Because I know they seem drunk.
Well, I am not a scientist, but wait a minute.
Wait.
So catnip actually comes from a plant. And you can, I know a few people who grow catnip and they just have it. And this is often, too, why you'll see cats get into plants and stuff, because it's a natural tendency of them to explore that way. Once your cat smells the catnip, it takes effect almost immediately. Depending on how much catnip your cat gets, depends on how high the effect will be and how long it will last. But typically it's like 10 or 15 minutes or something like that. And not all cats respond to catnip. This is important, because I'm done answering the question, why does my cat not respond to catnip? Okay. Some cats don't. It's an inherited response. And I think I read somewhere that 33%, or about one third of cats, do not respond to catnip. And doesn't mean there's anything wrong with the catnip or your cat. It's just how nature decided it should be. But when the catnip enters the cat's nose, it binds to these receptors on these sensory neurons in their nasal cavity, which activate all of these different control emotions and behaviors in the brain, which gets them really revved up.
Yes.
So most of the time, you don't want to just give your cat straight catnip and then nothing to do. You want to have toys that interact with the catnip, or be ready for, like I said, that 10 to 15 minute play session with the catnip. Now, the other big question is, how often can you give your cat catnip? I'm not aware of any cat ever overdosing on catnip. Catnip is non-toxic to cats. But if you give your cat too much catnip, or you give your cat the frequency of catnip is too often, they can throw up and they can have diarrhea. So I would just, you know, keep an eye on that. And if you think you're giving it too much, you probably are. Better be on the safe side and, you know, lower the frequency of catnip.
Yeah. I mean, too much of anything is, what is the saying? Too much of a good thing. Anything is bad if you have too much of it.
That's the saying. Anything is bad if you have too much of it.
I mean, yeah, Allison. Everything in moderation. That's definitely one. Yes.
I also just want to add something. I learned something, that don't leave hair ties out if you're a woman and you have a lot of hair ties.
Oh.
Or if you're a man with a lot of hair ties, don't do that, because it can twist inside on their intestines and strangle their intestines if they swallow it.
Oh.
Ouch.
Yeah. I learned that. So just a heads up from the cat camp.
Well, so like, I haven't seen a lot of cats, but as many cats as I've ever seen, I have seen cat buttholes. And why? Do they feel the need to present that to us? Is that like such an important part of who they are? Like, why do I always see the cat's butthole? I don't always see a dog's butthole.
Well, it's just tail placement and your eye placement, I think.
Maybe it's because they're like just on counters a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's closer to eye level.
Maybe you're just looking at them a lot.
I just feel like I see a lot more cat buttholes than I ever asked to. And I thought maybe it was like their way of saying hello, you know, presenting it.
I mean, not to my knowledge, except they're very clean. So they keep that tail up.
I have a theory as to why you think you've seen more. It's because cats have this little marketing device above their butthole, like one of those, those air things in front of a car. Their tail swings back and forth like one of those things. And it's like a little marketing device that draws your eye towards it.
Straight to the butthole.
Weekend sale right here. Come in.
Yeah.
Do we have any questions from the pet collective community?
Oh, we always have questions. Today we have some good ones. This one is from Anna on Instagram. She wants to know, what kind of toy should I give my power chewing dogs? P.S. Kong toys don't work. For her. For her, they don't work.
She said Kong toys don't work.
Yeah, explicitly.
Girl, well, I would say, why are your dogs actually tigers then? Man, it's very rare that Kong toys don't work for power chewers. However, it does happen. Here is my two recommendations for you. One is, there are alternative power chewer dog toy companies, okay? And if you do a Google search, you will find them. And I would just test them out. But while you're testing them out, test them while you can supervise. This is critical. You don't leave your dog and then come back and then find, oh, that one didn't work because they might have eaten half of it. So there are alternatives. The other one is, you may need to have your dog utilize toys that require a human element, meaning you're going to have a rope so you can play tug with your dog. The reason I'm hesitating, though, is because I don't want people to think dogs shouldn't want to chew. They want to chew, and a lot, and it's not necessarily even breed specific. There are just some dogs who just love chewing, like there are some dogs who love digging. So what I would try to find is a way to give your dog an outlet for that. For example, my mail shredder broke years ago, okay? And I didn't want to go spend a gazillion dollars on a new shredder. So I trained my dog, Callie, to rip up all my junk mail.
No, are you serious?
Yeah. I mean, I have videos of it on my Instagram.
That's amazing.
Everywhere, every time I go to the mailbox, she flips out. She's like, yes, it's time to chew. And so I go through my mail and then I hand her junk mail and she chews it up into little shreds. And then she comes back to me for the next one. And it's fun for her. It solves a problem for me. And it gets a lot of that chewing desire out. So if you have sticks in your backyard, let your dog chew those up. If you want to try junk mail, let them chew it up. Give them that outlet somewhere else, and then use toys that you can play with your dog. Using, you know, you find toys that you can use and play with your dog.
Good. Ooh, this is a great question. This one comes from Daryl the Dog, is how I'm going to pronounce that. Daryl the Dog on Instagram wants to know if there are any bone alternative chew toys that you would recommend. Traditional bones can be hard to digest. Yeah, and they can be dangerous because they can split. So real bones are not fail safe. What can we use instead that's safe and healthy?
I, for example, don't give my dog hoofs anymore. Mm. My dad just gave her one. She threw up in the middle of the night, and guess what came out? A little piece of hoof. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, we're not doing this. So I'm right there with you. My all-time favorite non-bone chew toy, as it's being called, is an antler. They are grossly expensive, guys.
Yeah.
I do not know why they cost so much money, but one antler could be like $30 or something. But they last a long time. Most dogs really enjoy the experience, or at least they seem to. And from my understanding, the marrow in some of those antlers, some of them don't have it, some of them do, can be good for them. So I would look into that. Alternatively, I would look into the rubber bones that are out there. And you can, a lot of those rubber bones have places where you can put in little treats or peanut butter or whatnot. And so it gives them a thing to chew on, but also has some treats that are hidden in there. That is a great alternative. But I would start with the antlers. The antlers are great. It's maybe my favorite thing to buy my dog.
And rawhide isn't necessarily a safe chewing option for our dogs either, right? I mean, they don't digest it well. And it can be processed with like dyes or bleach or different chemicals that are just harmful for your dog.
And my dog is a medium-sized dog. And so if I give her a, you know, you know those like cheap bones mm-hmm. that you can get almost anywhere. She's going to end up eating and swallowing that.
Oh yeah, and within 2 seconds. Yeah,
absolutely. And so a lot of this is size based. If you have a tiny dog, they might be able to chew on this bone and just get some of the flavor out, but not actually be big enough or strong enough to digest it. Mm-hmm. Where if you have a large dog, they may be able to. But again, the big caveat when you're introducing any toy to your pet is the very first time it should be supervised, because you don't know how, you can think you've thought of all the ways this could hurt them, but they are clever and they'll figure out something. So supervise your pets the first time. If you see that there are no issues, then, you know, rest your mind and enjoy it.
Do we have a producer question?
Oh, yeah, I do actually have a question.
Oh.
For you guys, yeah. Okay, so you may not know this about me, but in the 90s, I brought dinosaurs back to life. Okay, and it's a complicated process that wow. involves genetic scientists harnessing old mosquitoes and fossilized DNA, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I created a wildlife park on this island, and I invited a bunch of paleontologists to check it out, you know, look at my work, blah, blah, blah. However, this chubby guy who worked for me was engaging in industrial sabotage, and he caused a system-wide shutdown of the park's power supply, and the dinosaurs got out, and they attacked us, and it was ugly for a while there, but we escaped in these super cool Jeeps, and we were fine. And I know what you're thinking, Anosh, isn't that just the plot to Jurassic Park? And yeah, it sounds exactly like that, but it's not. And here's why. Mm. What I didn't mention is that I used to have this adorable dog that lived on the island with me, and he was so cute. But every single time I went to the bathroom, that dog would follow me in there and stare at me. And I was like, why do you do this, buddy? I love you, but it's a little weird. And so I was wondering if you knew why that was.
Yeah, well, first, I do want to thank you for all of your pioneering research in the field of dinosaurs and paleontology and all of that. It's been really great.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
To the most important question, why does your dog follow you to the bathroom? It's you don't have to overthink this one, guys. Your dog also follows you to the kitchen.
I was going
to
say.
Your dog also follows you to your bedroom. Your dog also follows you to the front door. Mm-hmm. Your dog is living in a home where you control the environment. So anything that can possibly happen to this dog is going to come from you. Whether it's going to get fed, go outside, get a treat, get a toy, get loved on, whatever it is, it's going to come from you. You are likely the most reinforcing thing in your dog's life. Think about that. Out of everything in the entire world, your dog finds you the most reinforcing. Incredible. So if you lived with the most, it'd be like if I lived with Britney Spears. I would follow her to the bathroom too. I love her. I'd be like, Britney, where are you going? Britney, where are you going? I would follow her around. So your dog is not going to let you out of its sight. Now, there is a healthy level to this, and there's an unhealthy level to this. If you go into the bathroom and don't allow your dog to come in and can close the door, and your dog doesn't whine, doesn't bark, doesn't scratch the door, you're good. It's healthy. If you can't go to the bathroom without your dog having a mini freak out, we've got some issues. And if they're not addressed, they're going to turn into separation anxiety. It is important that your dog has independence and learns to be alone, okay? Mm-hmm. They have to learn to be alone. So enjoy your time with your dog. Keep an eye out for any problem behaviors, but make sure you're carving out a little bit of alone time for yourself and for your dog.
Especially when you're in the bathroom. It's a great place to be alone.
And I will say, I had a cat once too, and the cat would do that all the time as well. This was also on a dinosaur island. We didn't learn our lesson, and it happened again, and we went back to the island.
Yeah, you did it twice.
But I had a cat there as well, and he would come into the bathroom and stare at me as well. So, but I guess it's for the same reason.
And I want to thank you, Anosh, too, for giving me that job training the Velociraptors.
Oh, yes. That was one of your first gigs back in the 90s.
I was brand new. Actually, I went and saw Jurassic Park, whatever that one is, with that famous person. See, I don't know anything about
Chris Pratt.
And I went with like four other animal trainers, and we were dying laughing at him clicker, not because he was doing nothing right. I don't know why they didn't hire a behavioral you have a big budget for this movie. Wouldn't you have some training applications that made sense? Like he was just clicking the clicker in their face like that did something, which is, I mean, it was, the whole thing was awful.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that wasn't my work. That was some new.
No, that was separate. Scientist. That was a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. What we were doing back in the 90s was way different. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. No. Mm. Yeah. Pioneering, as I said. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just thrilled that we have somebody so influential in the prehistoric animal space producing our pet podcast. So thank you to Anosh for being here. And Allison, it's always good to see you. You always put a smile on my face because you are just so funny and so darling.
Oh, I really appreciate that.
I realized I said that and I wasn't smiling, but there, now I'm smiling. There it is.
You can hear the smile. It makes a big difference.
It does make a difference. Thank you.
Guys, remember to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok at The Pet Collective, or you can find me at Allison Seeky.
You can find me at Kyle Kittleson.
Guys, send us your questions. We want to hear from you, and we want to answer them on our show. Also, check out the Pet Collective store at petcollective.shop. That's petcollective.shop for tons of amazing things for you and all of your fur babies. See you next week, guys. Bye.
Bye.
The Pet Collective podcast is produced by Jukin Media and The Pet Collective. Head producer, Anosh McAdam. Associate producer, Brandon Kendall. And our original score is composed by Corey Celeste.